Well, we're back, and we're running a little bit behind schedule, but we're going to give a little more time to our friend and travel journalist, Karen LePerry, who has written a number of articles on ecotourism and is our agritourism expert. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. And you?
Oh, I'm doing great, thanks.
So it was great to chat with you. I understand today you're going to discuss a subject that is very much in the news, and it's called the avian flu, influenza. Yeah, commonly referred to as the bird flu, I believe, right?
Yes, it goes by many names.
And why don't you just take it from there? You had a marvelous interview with a member of the Senate, I believe.
Yeah, it was Senator Bill Frist, who's the Senate Majority Leader, and also the rumored candidate for the 2008 Republican Party for the presidential campaign. So I felt very lucky to even get that interview, and it was an exclusive for Talking Travel.
So, well, how nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it just goes to show how our numbers are really going out there.
We're out there, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I guess your first question is going to be, what's avian influenza all about?
Took it right out of my mouth.
Okay. Well, you know, as you mentioned earlier, and actually you did a Freudian slip that was actually quite accurate when you said flu, influenza.
Right.
And as we indicated, it can go by avian influenza, bird flu, fowl plague. It's known, you know, in common vernacular and scientific jargon by different names. But basically what it is, it's an influenza type A virus that appears mostly in wild bird populations. And they end up being carriers because many of them do not exhibit sickness or death in those species. However, they do transfer it to domestic flocks, such as chickens, ducks, turkeys, and all that good stuff. And that's where it spreads explosively and frequently quite lethal.
And then you mention a lot in the waterfowl.
Yes. They, in particular, are known carriers for this, what's also referred to as the H5N1 virus.
Right.
And just to put that in perspective, in 1918, when we had the Spanish flu, that was the pandemic that went around the world and claimed anywhere from 50 to 100 million lives, depending upon how it was counted. That was the H1N1 virus. Both of them being type A, which is usually indigenous to bird populations. But what scientific research has found out is there's a connection between these type A viruses amongst birds and people, and that the most devastating ones that have been pandemic in the human population have been this type A virus.
And Karen, are the symptoms of this similar to the flus that we're familiar with in day-to-day life?
Basically so. Perhaps the only difference is it works its course in a much more rapid pace. And usually death, when it does occur, in an animal, it's respiratory failure.
Right.
Drowning in one's own mucus, basically. And that seems to be the case in humans as well. But you know, now that I mention humans, let me put that in perspective. Because there's a lot of rumors, you know, myths that are out there for travelers. And it's no wonder everybody's so concerned. And one of those myths is that the avian influenza, the Asiatic strain, we've seen outbreak in Hong Kong and Vietnam, Cambodia, etc., is being transmitted from person to person. And I would like to make it clear that that is not the case so far. We've had one case where it was a child that transmitted it to a mother, and I believe that was Vietnam. And it stopped at that point. There have been no other known cases. So, you know, the human-to-human transmission still has not happened. So it would be fair to characterize this at this point as being more a bird problem rather than a people problem.
Well, but it's transmitted from the birds to a human.
It can be.
I've noticed it in your chat with Senator Bill Frist that they're talking about it could take lives of tens of millions of people.
This would be a worst-case scenario,
right,
if a pandemic did break out. And because this is such a virulent strain, and it's evolving, which is part of the problem, and then there's also a lack of human immunity to this organism, we have a lot of conditions that can lead to a pandemic crisis. And right now, the way it's being approached is basically research, surveillance, monitoring wild flocks, and also when it's detected in domestic stock, the line of defense basically is putting them down, which is a layman's term for killing them.
And
it's the only way to contain it.
And you go on to say that most human deaths attributed to this strain involve individuals who were working in close proximity with backyard and caged birds.
And this is the important point for travelers. So that, you know, if your travels take you to Asia, which obviously is the most at-risk area,
right,
you know, one of the basic things you can do to minimize your risk and exposure is not to frequent these open-air markets where there's birds and fowl for sale, which there are many in Asia. You know, other precautions that can be taken is not to go on farms or places where there's domestic stocks of chicken or waterfowl or turkeys or whatever. And if your travels are such where you still are frequenting or going to a place like that, there are basic decontamination procedures that almost anyone who owns poultry flocks are well aware of that should be practiced.
And now, we're talking about live animals. What about consuming a chicken and this and duck? Does the cooking process eliminate the flu strain?
This is kind of evolving as far as the answer to that, because 2 months ago you had a lot of very reputed organizations saying that it didn't matter, that you didn't need to avoid poultry, eggs, whatever. Now what is happening is they're, I think, getting more conservative in the guidelines, and that is that poultry and eggs must be cooked at a certain temperature to ensure that if there is any virulent strain, that it is killed. And so, since we don't travel with a thermometer, and since we don't always see how the cook is cooking things and what the temperature is, probably the safest thing to do is to avoid anything that has raw egg, obviously, because this virus can exist on the eggshell and also in the yolk. Don't eat any eggs that are runny. Avoid things like Caesar salads, which have raw eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense things, but nonetheless things we might not think of initially.
But,
so we have to make the connection that, we need to practice safe food chain.
Well, but so far there hasn't been anything out there, as you know, that says don't eat chicken.
No, that is correct.
Okay. Because,
I can tell you though is that there's quite a few countries as of 2 months ago that have banned exports from France as far as foie gras and also some of their poultry stock.
Well, yeah,
there are concerns about contaminated flocks.
Because, we think of birds, we think of them in terms of chicken, but like you say, there's foie gras. People like chicken livers. I mean, there's so much. The eggs, eggs wouldn't have crossed my mind, but it's an obvious offshoot, So I guess there probably should be some better guidelines to all of this for travelers. And because, as you point out, this is a very serious thing. In some countries like the Dominican Republic and these Latin countries, everybody has a chicken in their house, and they're all running around out back because they like those chickens that go around and scratch the taste ear. And, in fact, it's one of the biggest markets in New York.
Free range.
for the Latin market. So I guess at some point that all has to be readdressed.
Well, I think you've just identified one of the big issues actually in Asia, because the domesticated bird flock has increased exponentially over the last couple decades, and most of it's designated for consumption. And because of that exponential increase, there's just that many more domesticated flocks that are there and at risk for, you know, receiving this virus. Again, you know, it exists in wild flock, but they don't necessarily exhibit symptoms. It's not until it transfers to the domestic stock that we see kind of the lethality of this play out. And the known human cases of transmission from, you know, whether it be wild or domestic, have almost always involved people, as we alluded to earlier, that have chickens around, that are working in chicken coops, that basically have day-to-day contact. So, you know, the advice we're trying to give travelers is, again, a lot of this is common sense. Know where the high, you know, where the high risks are, and take the necessary precautions to avoid that.
Well, I noticed in your question and answer with Senator first, and the question was, are there any particular concerns regarding shared borders with Canada and Mexico? And, you know, considering how common travel is between our countries, what is being done for coordinated responses should this influenza, present itself in humans? And so I guess they are looking at that, although there isn't any, you know, they haven't detected any problems at this point.
Well, you really should read his answer.
Yeah, well, I was going to let you do that.
Okay. Because I think it's very important for readers to know. And before I go into the answer, there's a whole new dimension to this, too, for travelers in terms of what happens if an area gets quarantined, or if a border closes, or, you know, if you're on a flight where, you know, there is someone identified as having the virus. It's a whole new dimension, which we really don't have the time to go into it today. But it's somewhat linked to this border issue in that the senator, in particular, Senator Frist, is telling state and local governments that, you know, don't wait until the catastrophe hits and then look to the federal government to provide the response, because there are a lot of unknowns here, number one. And number two, this is really a crisis about first responders and about the ability to do surveillance, to contain, to quarantine, and take the necessary preventive measures, which is more difficult from a centralized area. But even as we speak, there are joint exercises, binational exercises that are occurring down with Mexico as well as California, and I believe there are talks with Canada and the U.S. as well. Because, and I'm going to read the senator answer to this, and I quote, "Avian influenza knows no borders, so it's important that we monitor all travel. On an international level, the CDC and WHO continue to work together to detect and identify outbreaks so that we can effectively contain and reduce the spread of the H5N1 cases." So, you know, I think that's important, so that, you know, as a traveler, even if we don't go outside our own borders, most major organizations, both at the federal level and the world level, the global level, are predicting that this strain is going to hit the North American continent probably this year.
That's kind of scary, and I know we're running a little late, but I would just like to have you cover the traveler's checklist.
Yes, I think that's very important. And let me say at the outset that everyone and anyone who travels should check CDC's website for the most up-to-date information on where they're going to see, you know, if avian influenza presents there and what necessary precautions might be taken. But no matter where you go, there's still basic things that you really should do no matter where you travel. And as we covered, you know, one's avoiding contact with chickens, ducks, poultry, waterfowl, migratory birds. And one thing I haven't mentioned so far is hunters. Hunters are going to be at risk.
Right.
You know, that waterfowl, so something to be considering. Even though there's not a ban yet, the UK is considering imposing a hunting ban. I don't think the U.S. will be far behind once this strain presents in North America. Another thing, avoid contact with the birds, their feathers, their feces, and other waste. For example, you know, I had two Canadian geese that came up to my driveway yesterday. Some are migratory and some actually domesticate in Maryland. I had no way of knowing which they were. The first thing I did was I washed down the feces with water to get it out of the driveway and away from any possible exposure to my children.
Yeah, we get a lot of, in the area that I'm in, we get a lot of wild birds. We get those, we get ducks and those egrets and all kinds of birds.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're on a major flyway down there.
Now, you're also saying do not keep birds as pets?
Yeah.
That's a tough one for a lot of people.
That's a tough one, and, you know, I just put it out there.
Right.
I haven't always abided by that.
Right.
I think that's, you know, a personal judgment people need to make. But, you know, if the determination is that you have a pet bird and you want to keep it, probably the best thing you can do is keep it from any exposure to any other birds.